Now, a few of these hymns that we're singing right now are oldies but goodies, all right? And you have to have a little bit of age on you to be able to really appreciate those hymns. And they were the type of hymns that Bob loved and remembers from years ago, 30, 40 years ago. And kind of resurrecting some of them is really good. They got really good content to them. But we want to say welcome. We want to spend this Sunday in a tribute to our dear elder who served us very faithfully over 35 years, very faithfully in our fellowship group and all the different things that he has done, especially behind the scenes. You would never, or Bob, I should say, would never really want to stand up here and do a lot of public teaching. That was not his thing, but he did a lot of teaching through his life example and through his faithfulness. And so I'm so grateful for Bob, and this Sunday is a tribute to him. If you have your Bibles, will you take it just for a moment? I want you to go over to Hebrews chapter 13 for a second and take a look at verse 7, where the author of Hebrews now is reminding the early Jewish Christians who had lost loved ones, and especially the leaderships of the church had died sometimes martyrs' deaths. But in chapter 13 of the book of Hebrews, in verse 7, it says, "Remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you, and considering the result of their conduct, imitate their faith." Imitate their faith. Bob was certainly the type of a man who is easily remember and easily imitatable because he represented Christ among us. And many of you know that. You know that personally in your own life. And we're going to have an opportunity to hear about that today. Now, in order to get started with this, I want to thank David Torres, because David's not able to be here today. He so wanted to be here as one of our elders. But his father, his biological father, came to Christ recently, and he flew to El Salvador to baptize him. Isn't that something? So he was in a strait betwixt two, all right, whether to be here or to be absent and there baptizing his father. And I talked with him a little bit about it. I said, "You better get to El Salvador, all right? Don't you dare hang around, but go baptize your father." And he's preaching today there in El Salvador as well. So we're very grateful for him. That's the reason why he can't be here. But we want to show you just a very brief video of pictures that will help you recall some of Bob's ministry here in Joint Ears. And I think it will give you an opportunity to pluck up a few memories, if you will, of his faithfulness to the Lord. He always represented Christ very well in everything that he did. And that was true right to the very day that he died. The day that he died, I was able to visit him in the hospital just 2 hours before God took him home. And I remember talking with Bob there, and he could still understand some of the things that we were talking about. And I said, "Bob, you remember your wife, Glenda, right?" I said, "You know, one of the things that she's really well known for in Joint Ears is the fact that she used to take several women in Joint Ears aside and invite them to her house and do a formal tea, all right? And she loved doing that kind of thing, and in the process, talked about the gospel at the same time. I said, "Bob, I think Glenda right now is preparing a tea for you," all right? And that was just, I didn't know that God was going to take him 2 hours later. And he looked at me from his hospital bed, and he gave me a smile, and he nodded his head at that point. I don't know whether he fully understood me, but I think he did by his expression at that point. So he is going to be dearly missed. So let's take a look at a little bit of slides that David has put together. I've not seen this myself, so this will be the first time for me as well. And then we're going to open the mic up a little bit to give you the opportunity to share some things. myself and Pastor Rick, and if Pastor Tom shows up, we don't know. He's like the rapture. It's not, we don't know when that's going to take place. In just a few, it's a few moments. It's imminent. Let's put it that way. All right. So, and if he shows up, we're going to start off our open mic time just sharing just as elders. And then a little bit later on, we're going to have the opportunity, the chair of our elders, which is Chris Hamilton, is sitting here in the front. What an honor to have him here. And he's going to get up and just share a little bit in regards to Bob, as well as what it means to be a faithful elder as well. So let's see if we can get our video going here. All right, you saw that in several of those pictures, Rick Smith's picture shows up with Bob quite a bit. He was very close to Bob, and he had an opportunity during the memorial service this past Tuesday to share some of his reflections on Bob, and that was really wonderful. So thank you, Rick. Really appreciate that very much. And I'm sure that many of you have those same kind of reflections as well. So right now, Tom is still on his way. Just like the rapture. Oh, no, the rapture's here. All right. He just walked in. All right. Rick, I'm going to let Tom get a little bit settled here. And then, Rick, would you come up and share some of the things that you have in regards and thoughts about Bob and knowing him and working with him?
There's a lot to say about Bob, obviously. I know some of you are going to share, so I don't want to steal your thunder. But I think I was just looking at Galatians, the fruit of the Spirit. I think Bob's life emulated that in a profound way. Maybe he was soft-spoken, as he said, as John said. He didn't teach up here much, and he had a soft voice. But I really look at the scripture, and it really, to me, defines Bob. And then I'm just going to share a couple of times my wife and I had a blessing of going out with him. But Bob says the fruit of the Spirit is love. Well, obviously, Bob was a very lovable person, loved everyone. I don't remember ever hearing an unkind word from Bob in my life. Maybe he did sometime. And then also joyful, very joyful, great, good sense of humor, always smiling, even to the end, you know, the last year or so, it's been tough for him, but he was always joyful and smiling, and just the joy of the Lord was so evident in his life. Peace, very peaceful person, always was definitely would be a peacemaker. Patient. Bob was such a patient person, having to deal with his disabilities and having not able to live at home anymore and living in places. These group homes can be a challenge, and yet always a very patient person. Kindness, kind man, just always kind to everyone. Would go out of his way to be kind to people. I've talked to people that worked at the college with him, and they would say the same thing. He was a great man to work for at the school. Goodness, Bob was a good person, definitely goodness in his life, just full of good things that he's done. Served the Lord faithfully in his life. And then faithfulness, very much a faithful man for years in his job, with his family, with his children. Here serving for, I don't know, how many years was he in Joint Heirs? Probably 30 years faithfully serving here for a long time. There is so much to say for a man that's faithful. Gentle, very gentle man. I can't picture him in the military, but of course he was a lot younger than those days, so he must have been a tough guy to be in the military, but I just, it's hard to see Bob that way because I look at him as a gentle, kind man. Self-controlled, obviously very self-controlled man. And he was faithful to the end. He was serving as long as he could. He was coming to our elders' meetings up until just recently. He was in here, always wanted to still serve. And one thing he really did well here was reaching out to our visitors. My goodness, that was his love, to write little notes and welcome the visitors. I don't know how many years did he do that here for, so there's so much more I could say. And then just personally, yeah, my wife and I would love to get together with him, go get some yogurt at this yogurt shop close to where they lived. They were such a great team together. You know, you look at their personalities, and they were such a great team together also. And then just going over there and having dinner at their home was always a joy. So we are going to miss him, but I've learned a lot. Bob has taught me about how I should behave as an elder, as a leader. I've learned much from Bob. So anyway.
Sorry, I didn't recognize my cue. You know, it's impossible to sum up a life of one man in just a few moments. It would be impossible for any of us. But with Bob, we have to at least attempt to say something that kind of gives, for those of you that don't know him, and I don't need to have you raise your hands because I don't want to make you feel bad, because to not know him would be a tragedy of sorts, because he represented everything in our church that was good and right. When I first met him, before I was an elder, I have to be honest, I was scared of him. It's not that he was ever mean or anything like that, but he just had this sense of just such authority and knowledge, and he never really kind of cut corners. It was black and white. I didn't see a lot of gray in him, in his hair, but not in his words. And so I was just a little bit, you know, cautious. And then as I got to know him, especially as I came here over a decade ago, it was so encouraging to me. We would spend time together. He lived not too far from me, which he usually guilted me about every time he passed our house to say, "I'm right here. Why don't you go out to lunch with me more often?" And I said, "Well, Bob, I'm not always in the house when you go by. Just honk and let me know." But the times that we would go out, which were so precious, and yes, in the end, he started to say some very similar stories about his dear Glenda, which, of course, floored him. Glenda was his life and his joy, and he would bring her up all the time, as we spoke about, even in his memorial as if she was still here all the time. And because she was still present with him and was still very active in his thoughts. And so he would refer in past tense and then present tense. But it was always so encouraging because in a day and age where men are so often not giving their wives the deep respect and love and really adoration that is deserved of them, especially for those of us who have married way over our heads. And he did. He married way over his head with Glenda. He kept recounting those thoughts. And so that was always a precious thing. And then I found out, like you said, Rick, about his time in the service. My dad, you know, obviously served also in World War II, and so he would have a connection with that. But what was probably the most deeply sought-after thing that I had with him was just his massive encouragement of me. And I don't even want to tell you how much he encouraged me, because he would take me from a point where I would feel either low or not effective, and he would just build me up and build me up. That was something that he did, and almost I felt like he zeroed in to do it just for me. In fact, every time I preached in here or anywhere, he would come up. He'd be one of the first ones, and he would just tell me how encouraged he was and how important that was to him. And that just meant everything to me until I noticed he did it to all the guys. I thought, oh, thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it. No, no, but it was true. It was always genuine from his heart, because that's who he was. And he was always something that maybe we've talked about a little bit, but just to elaborate, not deeply. But even though he would have thoughts that go in and out of terms of Glenda or his present circumstances or even where he lived and all of that, and as things became more difficult, the one thing he never forgot was Christ. And it's very interesting because as an elder, you would think that perhaps having some of those thoughts going back and forth about, you know, his health or whatever the situation might be might destroy or affect his theology, his devotion, but none of that was affected. And in fact, I would say that was the least thing that was affected, because to hear him pray was to hear a man praying as if nothing was wrong, that he had not aged a day. Jesus was as current to him as the present moment. I remember one time a story from years ago, and I can't remember who the individual was, but it was a godly man who was taking care of his wife who was dying. And he was being taken care of by his wife that he was dying, and he was losing his memory. And they came to him, all his children, and said, "Dad, do you remember me?" I might have told this story before, just really moving. And he said, "I recognize your face, but I'm not sure." And then another one come up and like, "This is Bobby." And, "Oh, Bobby, yes, I think you were our neighbor. No, I was your son," or go on. And then someone, one of the family, said, "Dad, you remember Jesus, don't you?" He goes, "Oh, yes, him I remember." And that reminds me of Bob, that no matter what, the anchor of his soul was still intact. And his love and his appreciation and his just ability to think clearly, even on the elder board, like with issues and do's and don'ts, was fascinating to me. So he will be tremendously missed. You cannot, like I said, speak of, in fact, I've found out so many things at the memorial about his life even more, but you cannot replace a man. It doesn't even seem fair to try to sum up a man's life like that who had so much. But the thing I remember the most about him was his encouragement, his faithfulness to God, and just his love for Glenda. And I think if that was the thing I took away the most from that long and deep and love where people were talking about how he was a pilot, and I remember being told about how he would be going to Mexico and doing trips for missions as they were building and flying people back and forth. And I didn't even know he flew, which is amazing. He never brought it up. You know, those of us that are very prideful, we talk about ourselves all the time and everything. "Did you know I can fly?" And, but you know, "No, I didn't know." He told me five times, but Bob never talked about any of that kind of stuff. He was just so humble. But what I'll miss the most is just, again, that love. I hope that I come to my end and that I'm talking about Lori the same way he talked about Glenda. I hope I have the consciousness to know that the two most important things, Jesus and my wife, in my heart, are still that clear. So we miss Bob. We love him. And there's no one that will replace him. There really isn't. So it's just one of those voids that if you experience the man and knew him and he's gone, it's not like you have a replacement. There are other people that will rise up in the church. There are other elders that will come forward. It always happens. But there's no one like Bob.
Just before we open the mic for you all, let me share just a few things from my own perspective about Bob. I'm going to hitchhike a little bit on what Rick said and what Tom said as well. I think there are so many things that I would love to be able to sum up in regards to him and memories of him over the past 27 years I've served with him. But I think one of the things that I want to highlight is, first and foremost, Bob would hate this today. He would probably point to say, no, let's honor Christ today, all right? But yet the Bible does say in Romans 13, render honor to whom honor is due. Bible talks about that, and I think it's important that we do that, especially a person who died honoring Christ. And so the one thing that I really want to focus on, and in fact Tom brought it up a little bit, was his marriage and his relationship to Glenda. We've got to see this, many of you that have been in Joint Heirs for some time, over a number of years. And Glenda's part and very actively involved here and in Joint Heirs and in especially ministry to the women. But I want to focus on their marriage. They dearly loved one another. And they loved Christ. One day after Joint Heirs, when Bob in those latter days would sit back there in the wheelchair, when I was finished speaking, I went to collect my stuff, and Bob came up, and one of the guys, I don't know, maybe it was Bruce, said to me, Bob wants to talk with you. And I said, sure, I'd love to. So I sat down, and Bob looked really sad, and I began to think, was my message that bad? All right? And he was really sad, and I said, Bob, what's wrong? What's going on? And he said, I got to tell you something. Glenda left me. I said, what? Glenda left me. I said, Bob, Glenn didn't leave you. Glenda was called home by the Lord. She's in heaven. She's waiting for you now. And he looked at me like, oh my goodness, that's true. And then he looked at me and he said, thank you so much. He just needed that reminder. Because slowly he was forgetting things as time went on. Those of you that know him know that was the case. No, she did not leave you. She's waiting for you. And that's the reason why I shared that little story about 2 hours before he died. I said, Glenda, they're in heaven preparing a really nice tea for you. So, their relationship to one another bear fruit in their wonderful children. Some of you that were at the memorial had an opportunity to hear three of their daughters sing, and it was beautiful. It was just absolutely outstanding. And then Tom had an opportunity to share the gospel as well at the funeral or at the memorial service, and that was just terrific as well. And I'm sure that Bob would have been very, very well pleased about that. But he would probably say, don't focus on me, focus on my Lord. That knowing Bob, that's exactly what he would say. Well, we want to give you an opportunity. So we're going to have a mic coming around, and you need to stand up. If you would do that, and I say to the seminary students, use your preacher's voice, okay? Because if you have a very soft voice, you got to project a little bit so all of us can hear. I have 73-year-old ears, and I don't hear as well anymore, okay? So, but First of all, I want to ask, are there any family members of Bob here? I can see some. They are there in the back. They are. I want to give family members first. If they want to say something, I want to give some family members, it's not to put pressure on anybody, all right, to say something if they would like to, all right? And so if you would like to say something, just raise your hand, whether you're a close family member, just a family member. I want to give the family a chance to do that first. Okay, they just want to hear. That's okay, because I think there are plenty of us that have some things to say. So anyone like to share a little bit about your memory on how God used Bob to be a blessing to you? All right, George.
Good morning. I'm George Crawford. I'm one of the elders here. And I had the privilege of spending an awful lot of time with Bob in the last few years of his life, often riding with him to and from elders' meetings. Grace to you. What John said about Rick Smith and Nancy Smith was absolutely correct. They were terrific in helping care for Bob at that time. There is an aspect to Bob's life that I don't think has really come out yet, and that is it's a great demonstration of multi-generational faithfulness. What you saw when you saw Bob's life, what you think about it when you think about his legacy, God's faithfulness over generations. Mm-hmm. Deuteronomy 5:10 describes our father as showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love him and keep his commandments. And we saw that with Bob. When I rode with him, I heard, I don't know how many times, him talking about his grandparents, particularly his grandmother. If I recall correctly, the country, I believe it was India. And Diana just gave me the nod that that is correct. His grandparents were faithful ministries to India. Bob talked repeatedly about his paternal grandmother. And we know the prayer and the example that she set for him. His father didn't follow Christ, tragically, but that faithfulness of God went through. Bob was an elder here at least 32 years, and I'm not sure we've nailed down exactly how long that service was. I can remember my eldest son, just a child at the time, walking up to Bob and saying, "You are a wonderful pastor." Just a small kid, he sensed that. At the memorial service, three of Bob's granddaughters sang a trio. I talked with one of them afterwards, Casey, Leanne and Greg's daughter. And she mentioned the faithfulness of Bob, and her response to that was to turn her mind to Psalm 92. The righteous man will flourish like the palm tree. He will grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Planted in the house of the Lord, they will flourish in the courts of our God. And I like this next verse. They will still yield fruit in old age. Even when he was feeling the frustration, which he did, of not being able to fully comprehend what was going on in the elders' meetings, not being able to fully participate like he would like, that desire to serve was still there. They will still yield fruit in old age. They will be full of sap and very green. There will be a lot of life energy still there. And the next verse, to declare that the Lord is upright, he is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. He would say that today. But you see, five generations of faithfulness have been demonstrated by that brother of ours.
Well, to see a man who starts really well but also finishes very well, that's really key. Who else would like to share some of your thoughts? See, there's lots of people who do, but you're too afraid to stand up. All right, but don't be afraid. Here, use this one.
Bob taught me a lot of things. He taught me a word, insegrevious. He used to love to use that word because when he used it with me, I'm thinking, wow, my vocabulary isn't as good as I thought it was. I have no idea what that word means. It doesn't mean anything. But he loved to use it and look at the look on your face. He was a little bit mischievous. And you would find that out with the stories that he would tell when he was in high school and such. And so it was just, he was a fun guy to be around and always joyful. I loved it when Rick went through the fruit of the Spirit to explain. That was, Bob was filled with the Spirit. But I think, and I wrote down a whole bunch of things. I'm not going to go through all of those, but His life verse, in our Bible study, sometimes we teach through people's life verses. What's your life verse? And we will teach on that. And this was his. There might have been more than this one, but this was at least one that was important to him. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Lord. And when I think about Bob, I think about that. Toiling for the Lord, working hard, being faithful, and he modeled that. And there was something about, you know, I love all of our elders, and if you don't know your elders, you need to get to know them. They are godly men. Many of them are pastors, and we benefit from the teaching, even in this class, every week from our pastors who are elders. But there's something about a lay elder that you can identify with. George is a lay elder. Chris, you're going to hear from Chris. When Bob was getting older and I was helping him with rides and such, and many of you were doing that, that was just a time to talk. And he had gone through the same experiences that I was going through, just in the business world. Just dealing with people and policies and procedures maybe that were ungodly. And I saw how he navigated in a biblical way those things and with great wisdom. One of the things that really impressed me, the college, you might not know this, but some of the neighbors are not too happy about Masters University. They want a quiet neighborhood, and it's not always quiet when you got, you know, 1,500 college kids. But he was able to navigate those waters. The college kids are laughing, yeah. He was able to navigate those waters. He had a great reputation with those folks that generally wouldn't have liked the college, and they trusted him. That was a way he navigated something out in the real world that he was, and partially in leadership, he was a head of operations. And so it was just a delight and wonderful, and I'm blessed and thankful for God for those talks in the car and in Bible study where we could talk as just two guys in the business world. So that's what I'm grateful for, and that's what I praise God for.
Now, we don't have a lot of time, so... If you want to speak, okay, good. All right, you want? Let's see. I think we got it fixed. They healed it. Okay, good.
Okay, I go with this guy. When I think of Bob, I can't think of Bob without thinking of Glenda as well, because they were really one. They were one until they each drew their last breath. And I was thinking about what to say about him. So much has been said. I don't want to repeat myself, but I remembered a book that Glenda gave me many, many years ago, a book she wrote in 2002, it's published then, A Psalm for Brides. And I would have brought my copy, but I gave it to my daughter when she got married. But this is what it says under her book. One of the axioms of life is you can't change another person. You can't control another person. You can only change self, and you can only change, you can only control yourself, excuse me. This is a challenging, hard concept. Change takes a long time. And I think with Bob, Doug and I knew them for, I don't know, I have no idea how long we knew them, a long, 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 long time. And we knew the past, and we saw the change that God had done in both of their lives. So my encouragement to you women is love your husbands. Glenda always referred to Bob as my hubby. That's all I ever heard, my hubby. And Bob always referred to Glenda as my bride. So remember to love one another and pray over the Psalms. Pray for your husbands. And just pray that they will endure as faithfully as Bob Houghton did. And by the way, Diana, when I would pick up Bob before he got unable to really maneuver, I would pick him up sometimes, and he would be always smiling, but a little grousy that, you know, he was in this home and sorry that I had to pick him up and everything. And then he would stop himself. And he would say, but Diana loves me, and I know Diana only wants the best for me. He was living out the Psalms, talking truth to himself. So anyways, if we can all be like that.
Just real quick. Yeah. I say, can I talk? And then I stand up here. That's horrible. So this story came. Is Caesar here today with us? I don't know. So Caesar went to go, one of our folks went to go pick him up, and Bob, for a while, was at a residence that had a very steep incline. And so he went to go get him, and he walked up there, and he was walking Bob back down to the car, and the car's right there, and they started to tilt. And so they went, oh, no. And so they both kind of fell into the grass beside the car sideways. And as they're sitting there, and, of course, you know, poor Caesar is trying to do his job, and Bob goes, hey, don't tell anybody about this, because we're not supposed to dance like this. That was just Bob.
That was truly Bob. Yes, okay. Brian.
Thanks. One of my first memories of Bob was when my wife and I had just gotten married. And we were kicked out of the singles group. When you get married, you're kicked out. And so we were looking for fellowship groups. And we came to Joint Heirs. And Bob came up front. I had never met him. And he shared just the importance of writing cards. And that was what he wanted to share. So I just want to encourage you all that it's really important that you write a card to someone and that you tell them how much you care for them and just encourage them that way. And that was a big impact on us as we were we were just looking for a fellowship group. We wanted to have a place where we could learn from older people and as newly married. And so that was really impactful. We ended up coming here. And I got to experience Bob in the men's Bible study quite a bit and at the beginning, and just enjoyed his care, his focused desire to pour into the next generation and to just teach the younger men. And I also got to be blessed through working with Diana at TMAI a lot and see the fruit of his and Glenda's just shepherding of their own kids. And so we were blessed many, many ways through Bob and Glenda. I have one quick story about Glenda, too, that was really impactful. One time she was sitting behind Alex and me in the sanctuary. And for some reason, we had the kids in between us. Our kids were really young. She came up to me afterwards. She said, don't ever let your kids sit in between you and your wife. She said, you always need to sit next to your wife. The kids can sit on the outside.
Yeah.
And we've done that ever since. That was really good advice. It was like, that's really, really helpful. So I appreciated that, just directness about them. She once told my son, you need to shake firmer. You need to shake hands firmer. So we appreciated them, and we're blessed a lot through Glenda and Bob.
And that was truly Glenda. Too. All right, good. All right, back there in the back.
Sean, and Bob had sent me one of those cards in, 2002 when we first came. And then he took me out to have breakfast at the way station and just continued to do that with me. And then he and Glenda would have Alfreda and I over for dinner, the corner bakery, which they liked. And Glenda had Alfreda over for tea and one of those tea things. And Alfreda ended up teaching our daughters. But just all those things that Brian just mentioned about, they told us too, you don't let the kids sit between you. It's you two and then the kids come alongside, right? But just Bob's faithfulness and in the men's Bible study, just wanting to see men love their wives, love their children, and also be faithful and have integrity in their jobs. And that was very important as well. Being in the business world, Bob was faithful and had integrity, and he encouraged men. And that's one of the main focuses in our men's Bible study, to encourage men to love their wives, love their children, and to be faithful and have integrity in their jobs and in life. He was a man of God that was my spiritual dad. And just love him and miss him.
Yeah.
One funny story is I went and picked him up in my truck. You know, some of you, I have a very big truck. And it was at the place that had the hill. I was trying to help him in. And he had his walker at that time. And he started to fall out. Oh, no. And he obviously couldn't help himself as good as he used to. Very strong guy. But just at that time, couldn't. And I wasn't about to let him fall. So I ended up catching him, and he said, don't let me fall, because Diana will find out, and we'll both be in trouble. I said, okay, it's our secret. Until now. So anyway, but yeah, Bob was an awesome guy, and I just love him, knowing him all these years. So I'll keep it short.
All right, that's great. We do one or two more. Bruce, you want to come up here? You're welcome to this mic, too.
Hi. First of all, I just want to say thank you for all the prayers that you guys put up for me last week when I was in the hospital. And one of the things when I was in the triage room, I was thinking that had Bob been there or been with us at that time, he would have been sitting right by my side. He would have sat there and prayed with me and probably not have left until he had to. And I told Janice that that was the first thoughts that came to my mind. So that Sunday when I was in there, I was on some pretty heavy-duty antibiotics, IVs, and I told the doctor that I really want to be able to make Bob's memorial, or I had a friend I want to make a memorial on, and she looked at me and she said, think about yourself, and you probably won't be able to make it. And I said, well, I really have a hard time with that, so, but if we can do something about it. And the nice thing about being next to Grace Church when you're at Kaiser is that when the church let out, we had the prayer chain train come through my room, and they all sat and laid hands on me and prayed. And the next morning, the doctor came in, and she started undoing my IVs. And my white blood cell count was actually critical at that point the day before. And she said, I just saw your labs, and they're great. And I'm going to discharge you today. And I was able to make Bob's memorial, which I thought was great. And when I first met Bob, and like Sean, he wasn't my biological father, but to many of us, he was a father figure. And I met him right in that room across the hall about 29 years ago when he still parted his hair on the side. And, or could part his hair on the side. like I used to be able to do. And the one thing I noticed about him is that he, when we joined, he was our older that did our interview. And the one thing I noticed about him was a servant's heart. I came from a small church where we did a lot of the service there. But the first thing I noticed was a servant's heart, and that's what attracted me to him. And even in my work, it carried over. I was in charge sometimes of hiring physicians, and my owner would talk to them and just go through their curriculum vitae and, you know, see their history with schools they went to. And my first question was always, why do you want to do this? What makes you compelled to work with the deaf and dying? And I looked for that heart, and I looked for that servant's heart. And that's one thing Bob instilled on me, was to be able to serve. And I know many in this room are servants, and they serve all the time. And a lot of you don't know this either, but at one point I had left the church. I was a prodigal. And I remember every day I would get texts from Glenda that encouraged me, and she'd always be praying for me. And her and Bob would always encourage me to come back, and I did. When I did was restored, I came back, and the first person I went to go see was Bob. And the one thing about cognitive issues or dementia is that a lot of times we repeat ourselves. And when I first walked in the room, Bob, he reprimanded me. I mean, he was like, we prayed for you. Why didn't you come back? And then he forgave me. And then he grabbed my hand and he said, let's pray with Janice and Brittany and I. And then about 15 minutes later, he reprimanded me again.
That's the positive side.
Yeah. But he forgave me. And he prayed for me almost verbatim. Then about 10 minutes later, he reprimanded me again. I was like wanting to get out of there. I couldn't take it. I felt like I just went 15 rounds. But but he forgave me again, and he prayed for me exactly like he did. And I mean, the one thing about that disease is it affects the brain, but it doesn't really affect the heart. And you could really see the Lord in his heart. Man, I mean, I'm going to miss him. One of the funniest stories about him, though, is Bob and Glenda were very ubiquitous. If you lived in Santa Clara, you would know that. And one time Janice and I went out to dinner, and we were at this place called the Greens, and we're having dinner, and we look up, and there's Bob and Glenda. And we talked to them. They went and had their dinner. We had ours. And then Janice and I decided, I think, to go to either Starbucks or get an ice cream. And a couple miles away, and we were standing in line, and we looked, and there's Bob and Glenda again. And then we ended up going to a movie on the other side of town. And we're in the line, and guess who's in line? Bob and Glenda. And I'm like telling Janice, I go, accountability is one thing, but they're really, yeah. And then I remember one time I had my car story. I remember Doug and I were helping. I used to pick up Bob to go to Bible study, and Doug and I were trying to get Bob in the car, and Bob loved cars. He was always asking me what kind of car I had, and then he wanted to drive the night I was taking him home. And I remember that as I was pretty firm. I said, no, Bob, I got to get you in the car. And he was a pretty stout man then. He was a little heavier, so he's kind of hard to control if he did start leaning. And so Doug and I were standing there, and I finally got firm, and I said, no, Bob. And Bob stops, and he looks down, and he starts counting to 10. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, Bob, "Are you practicing anger management procedures?" And he just had that mischievous smile on his face, and he was. You could tell he was a little flustered, but we ended up putting him in the car and getting him home. And I remember Bob, you know, we both had the love of sports and aviation, and we used to always go to the basketball games together. And one time I went to pay, and he got pulled my hand back, and he says, "No, it's on me." And he had a season pass, and you know, and I go, "Wow, look at you," and ended up giving me a season pass. But when we were out one night, I said, "You know, Bob, the gym looks great. I know he put in a lot of work into upgrading the gym." And I said, "Bob, you know, how come they don't name like a building or like the court after you? You know, they named the gym after John." And he said, "Well, they did. They took a piece of tape and they put my name on an Andy Gump over by the." And I said, "Okay," but I know we're running out of time. But Bob just meant just so much to me and my family, and like all of you, and I just know where he's at right now. And the day he passed, it was weird because I was with a family from the church, and I was helping them find a home over in Granada Hills. And I had told the family around 2 or 3, I said, I need to go. And they go, "Where?" And I go, "I got to go to the hospital." And they said, "Why, are you sick?" I said, "No, I just feel like I got to go." So I got there, and I got the name badge like we had done the previous visits. And I noticed the number on it was different, and it was over in the T building. And I said, "Wow," I said, "that's one of two things. Either they're grabbing the room for privacy, or he may be getting better." And so when I got there, the door was shut, and I walked in, and everybody was having like the vigil. And so I went downstairs, and I just prayed to God that he would take him and that he would be with Glenda. And when I got home, a couple of minutes later, Rick had called me and told me he had passed. And so I figured it was probably that time. I was down there praying behind the Christmas tree on the first floor. And then I had walked my dog. And when I came back, there was a gift on the doorstep. And it was from Bob. And it was 4 days early, and a lot of us got it. And but it said on there, "Bob Hutton, I appreciate you." Now, I know he didn't send it. I know he didn't write that. But what I do know is that I think it's God's way of just saying bye, and I'll see you later. And I know we will. So I love that man, and I'm going to miss him.
I think both Bob and Glenda were like parents to Bruce and Janice. All right, we have an opportunity just to kind of close off our time today, and we're going to have Chris Hamilton, who's the chairman of our elders, come and make comments about Bob and share a few things that are on his heart. Right after that, we're going to have a song and then a prayer, and we'll be finished.
Thank you, John, and thank you for the privilege it is to be here. I'm not going to take long, obviously. I loved Bob. I called him Boss. I always said, "Hi, Boss," and he always rolled his eyes. You can imagine, if you know Bob, how he reacted to anybody calling him Boss. There's a couple of reasons why I called him Boss. One is he was a girl dad, and I was a girl dad. I had 3 daughters. He had 4, so he won. He did better than me. And he was married to a remarkable woman. And I knew Glenda before I knew Bob, really. And I think that's probably true of most people. You noticed Glenda long before you would have noticed Bob. And I admired Glenda. So understand this when I say this. I remember going to Bob once saying, "How in the world does a man lead Glenda? How do you do that?" She was so quality. And some of you are sitting here, maybe you never met Glenda, and you're hearing as much about Glenda as you're hearing about Bob. And that's kind of the point. They were such a team. And I, like Tom, I'm in the same club. I outpunted my coverage by a mile. I married way over my head. I think Bob did too. Tom, the three of us are in that club for sure. And I wanted to know, how do you lead a woman like Glenda? Because I felt like I was married to a woman like Glenda. And also, I used to pick his brain constantly on how to be a girl dad. How do I lead teenage? I think when he and I started getting together, I had daughters that were just entering the teenage years. He was such a good teacher, and he was not a preacher. But just asking him questions with his sense of humor, his bluntness, and just by observation. And he did love his girls. And Diana, you've heard this a lot. He was afraid of you. And as I get older, I understand the sweetness of that, because I know how much I love my daughters. And in some sense, I'm afraid of them too. Because when they tell me what to do, I'm going to do it. But I learned so much from Bob and all of that. And here at Grace Church, you know, in this past year, it's been a tough year, especially for those of us on the elder board, because that elder room has changed significantly. We lost two elders to heaven. We lost a preacher, the one the world knows, John MacArthur. He was well known because he was a preacher and a teacher and a writer, and he was very public. But I would tell you that we also lost another preacher, Bob Houghton. And he didn't get up in front of groups very often, and he was not the author and the preacher and the teacher, but boy, was he a teacher. And you all know this. His life spoke so much. And just by his leadership of an amazing woman and his love and leadership of an amazing family, I love what George said, the generational nature of Bob and Glenda Houghton, the before them, the them, and then the after them, is remarkable. And I think that's what all of us would want as we left this earth. And I just want to point out something in 1 Peter 5. You don't have to turn there. It's probably a familiar passage to you. But Bob was an amazing elder. He loved being an elder. He wanted to be an elder to the end. Diana would always check in with me, is it okay if he's coming? And I would always say, absolutely, of course. And there are those nights, nobody knows this until now, I would go up to Bob at the elder dinner and start talking to him. And the whole design was to find out, is this a night where I can give him the microphone and have him close the meeting in prayer? And there were times when he could, and it was so sweet to hear Bob pray. And my goal was to include Bob as much as we could to the end, because he had so much sway. The world doesn't know about Bob Houghton, and I'm talking about the Christian world outside of Grace Church. The elders around that table, boy, we know Bob Houghton. We know what we had. We knew what we had at the time. And 1 Peter 5 describes elders, good elders. It describes Bob Houghton. Peter says, I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elders and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God among you. That was Bob. Exercising oversight voluntarily, it says, according to the will of God, with eagerness, it says, and proving to be examples to the flock. Those are the three marks of a good elder. And that was Bob. And I love the next verse after that section, verse 4. And this is also Bob. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. That's where Bob is now. That is his reward. And that's not because he was a good elder. It's not because he was a good husband. It's not because he was a good dad. He was all of that. Not because he was a good friend, but because of the work of Jesus Christ on the cross on his behalf. And you know Bob believed that because he preached that. He was never in the pulpit necessarily, but his life preached that. And I walked in wanting to reference Hebrews 13:7 also. You started with it, so I'll end with it. Hebrews 13:7 says, remember those who led you. And I just wanted to tell you, thank you for obeying Scripture. This morning was very, very biblical. This is what we're called to do, is to remember those who led us. Those who spoke the word of God to us. That's Bob Houghton. And considering his conduct, imitate his faith. So we did good this morning, I think, by remembering Bob. We remember his leadership, how he spoke the word of God to us, and the conduct of his life. And now it's our responsibility to honor Bob and honor Christ by going from here and imitating his faith. And he made it easy to do that, didn't he? So thank you. And Hebrews 13:17 talks about that we are to be a joy to our elders, and I know you were to him. He talked about you. He was grateful for you. And from a human standpoint, you were his lifeline. You were the joy in his life, and so I commend you that joint heirs was very much a joy for him to shepherd. You made it easy. You made it joyful, and I know you do for the elders who are in here. So thank you for that, and thank you for sharing Bob with the rest of the church. And